Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles to my right.
Hello.
A very special guest to my left. I will let David introduce. But before I do, we are at Clear Creek Abbey at the fourth annual Catholic Man Show campout with at least 40 of our closest friends from all over the country. Welcome everybody to the Catholic Man Show campout. Dave, I'll let you do the honors in introducing our guest.
So our distinguished guest today is Brother Bachman, monk here at Bachman. Brother, father.
I'm a priest.
Yes.
We go by brothers. It's just simply a custom. Whenever you get a letter or something from us, we'll sign brother and last name. That dates from, the 17th century French monasticism. Father Abbott will sign his letters, Brother Philip Anderson Abbott. But he's a priest, so right. You can call me Father.
Okay.
Or you can call me Brother. I'm not going to get angry at you.
Good.
What is the most... I've wondered this before. It's weird for me not... Like, if I know you're a priest, not to call you Father. It's like,
yes.
I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah.
What should I do?
The etiquette is...
I certainly would call... If I knew someone was a priest, I would call him Father.
Okay. That is good to know.
But is
but
the
thing is, you can't
etiquette?
See. You can't see because all of the brothers, all of the members of the community are dressed the same. So you have to see them at the altar.
Ah, yes. Yeah, because I made that mistake one year. The first year we were out here, Dave and I were walking up to the monastery. There was what I found out was a lay brother that walked up to us. He was talking to us. And I kneeled down and I said, Father, can you give me your blessing?
Yeah.
And I looked like a fool.
He was halfway through his confession before.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, listen, I can't give you absolution. I'm not a priest.
Yeah. That's more embarrassing than you're calling a priest brother. You see?
See, I know.
So
yeah,
you can call anybody,
that's more embarrassing.
Any of the monks brother. But you have to know before you start asking for a blessing or something like that he is a priest.
Uh-huh.
Or you just ask him. He'll tell you.
I play it safe now. I know that to ask.
I think it'd be interesting, or I think many of our listeners would like to just know a little bit about Clear Creek. Can you give us like the highlights, the history of Our Lady of Clear Creek?
Okay, well, Clear Creek Abbey was founded in 1999, in September of 1999. There were 13 founders. They were all members of French communities of the Congregation of Salem. What the core of this group came from an integrated humanities program in Kansas They were students of Dr. Senior, and Dr. Senior recommended, in order to give a background to the Christian literature that he was teaching, that they go and get an initiation into the kind of Catholic culture that really brings that to life as a background. So many of them spent 3 to 6 months there, and some of them at the end felt the call. There may have been maybe a few more than a dozen that entered. And
religious life
entered Fongombo, or one of the daughter abbeys of Fongombo.
Uh-huh.
And we're talking there about the 70s, and the abbot at that time said that we're going to have to found in America. But other things came up, and he forgot about it. Meanwhile, he died, and there's another abbot. And then in the mid-90s, circumstances just came up such that the abbot realized that, yes, now's the time, we've got to move. And so he started looking around the country for, first of all, a diocese. You have to have a bishop who approves and sure. accepts and welcomes you in. There were several trips made, and this diocese recommended itself for two reasons. First of all, the warm welcome of Bishop Slattery and the lay people that were consulted around here. And then second of all, it's not too far from the hometown of Wichita, the hometown of the core of the founders. I'm actually second wave. I'm not an American, and I'm not a Kansan. I'm a Canadian, actually. I learned about Fongombo from a parish priest who was very interested in things monastic. We founded in 99, and we were living down at the old monastery. By 2001, 2002, it became clear that the old monastery, the log cabin and the sheet metal building, was not going to suffice for us. We were already outgrowing it. So we started a building down up on the plateau above the old monastery. And now we moved in 2008 into that building. And that is now where we are. We're 60 monks. We've got 35 cells in a permanent building. The rest are kind of temporary mm-hmm. cells. So we're in kind of a precarious position. We're kind of up against the wall. We have to build another lodging building. So we've been blessed with vocations. Starting at 13, now we're at 60. Just not too many. Because if there are too many, you can't form them. You can't give them a good education, monastic education. Mm. And on the other hand, not too few, which is always has been the problem for monasteries these days.
Right.
We've really been blessed that way. There we go.
So you're trying to build another...
Lodging.
What do you call it?
Okay. Well, basically what that turns out to be is one wing of the quadrangle that makes a cloister. A monastery is usually built in the form of a square with, on the interior of that square, a covered walkway, which you call a cloister. On one side of that square will be the church. We've built a lodging complex on an adjacent side that is at right angles to the church. Opposite that lodging building, that is again at right angles to the church, but on the other side, we're hoping to build as soon as things become possible, financially and otherwise, another lodging building which should provide us with the accommodation that we need for the monks.
So I ask you that question because I was thinking there might be someone who is interested in making a donation to the monastery to help you, because the way that you're building is just so beautiful. You know, the mindset of you monks is like, That's awesome, because you're not thinking about tomorrow or next year. No. You're thinking about 1,000 years from now, and so mm-hmm. what you're building is still going to be here, God willing, mm-hmm. in 1,000 years.
It's a different mentality, and it's possible because living in a community like that, especially when you have young people entering, and that gives a certain amount of hope and confidence mm-hmm. in the life of the family. You look beyond your own lifetime, and you see that at least you hope for a long tradition of monastic presence, and so that's going to necessarily influence the way you think, first of all, and then the way you build.
So if somebody did want to make a donation, how would be the best way for them to do that?
The best way would be to contact Father Abbott, either by phone or by email. The email, the address is on our website, clearcreekmonks.org. Mm-hmm. The phone number of the monastery is 918-772-2454. And you just make it clear what it's about, and they'll pass you on to, if they're not the abbot, then someone who can answer for him.
Sure. Okay.
And I love how on your website, you guys should go to it anyway, because it has a layout. Your website is very beautiful, but it lays out exactly what you guys are doing throughout the day, the prayers that you're praying. So that way, maybe if somebody was curious and wanting to pray, with you, but not here at Clear Creek, they could go onto your website and see exactly what you're praying and when you're praying it, the liturgy of the hours.
We do have a thing called oblates. These are lay people who are interested in, they're kind of the fringe of the monastery, the lay fringe of the monastery. They're interested in keeping contact with the monks. And to a greater or lesser extent, they will do just that. They'll try to associate themselves in prayer with the monks who are at prayer at a certain point of the day.
Mm-hmm. Which beautiful. Is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many do you have, oblates? Do you know?
I would put it in the region of about 100.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
That's that's excellent.
Yeah. And you said you had 60 people here at the monastery, correct?
60 monks.
Monks.
Yes.
60 monks.
60 monks. That is, they're actually, to be entirely truthful, there are four now waiting to receive the habit.
Okay.
So in lay clothes.
Wonderful.
That's who's with you at the hours today.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see them in lay clothes, huh?
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.
All right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Inahan and Father Bachman, monk of Our Lady of Clear Creek Abbey, here in beautiful Hulbert, Oklahoma. This segment is brought to you by the Catholic Woodworker, catholicwoodworker.com. Use promo code TCMS for 10% off
all purchases
on his website, which are all very beautiful and awesome.
Rosaries, home altars, crucifixes, name it.
All
heirloom
kinds of
quality.
Awesome stuff.
You can do it.
Also, Jonathan is just a good guy.
He is a good family man.
So anyway, brother, we're going to be talking today about chant.
Yeah.
That's something that...
Is very unique.
Yes, the Benedictines... Is it a Benedictine thing? Or is it monastic thing?
No. Well, okay. Yes, that's a very... judicious remark. It is a Benedictine thing, in as much as
All right.
He actually meant that in a bad way. I'm just joking.
No. The liturgy and the chant really are characteristic of our life, in as much as that's what our life turns around. You take a look at the other different kinds of religious. You have a Dominican. He's a doctor in theology. He preaches. You take a Franciscan. He preaches to the little people. He gives missions. Redemptorist. Same kind of thing. The monk he lives for the liturgy. And the chant is cultivated by us. You see, that needs a little bit of explanation because not every monastery in the world is so concerned about chant or cultivates the chant to the same degree. This is characteristic of the French congregation, who is contemplative. That's one reason we have not, in our congregation, taken up any outside work, such as a seminary or a school or anything like that. So our life is totally is focused on our prayer in choir. Now, when you do that, what you're asking of a young monk entering at 22, 23 years of age is to spend his whole life that way. You don't want to give him something that's of lesser quality. It's got to be something that's really good.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
And that kind of enters into what you remarked before about the kind of architecture. You can live for a while in shanties, but when you've got a community that plans to be there for several generations, you've got to build, first of all, with time in mind, but also with a certain propriety so that you like to return to your monastery. You like to be in your monastery.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
You need a certain amount of space, too. If all of the ceilings are low, I mean, that affects your morale, huh?
Oh, sure.
So,
and acoustics.
Acoustics in the church, yes, of course. Yes, the chant. Many of the monasteries have given up on the chant because it didn't seem part of the aggiornamento. Aggiornamento means to go closer to normal kind of life, the kind of music that you hear on the streets and on the radio and that kind of thing. That's not the philosophy that we have held on to. It's more that what you're looking for a long-term work like a Benedictine life is something of quality, something beautiful, something that you won't get. Well, you will get tired of it because human nature is weak. But something that is worthy and can sustain your devotion all the way for several decades till you die. And so that requires a certain amount of investment. Latin, first of all, is the first obstacle. The monk that enters Clear Creek will have to, first of all, have attained a degree of Latin proficiency equivalent to first year university. Because that makes sense, because our liturgy is in Latin. And in order to follow it, you to know what you're praying, you have to know. And one would ask, why would you bother to do something as strange as pray in Latin and then pray in chant, which is music that's characteristic of second to the 12th century?
Right. Yeah.
More than a 1,000 years back.
Huh? Yeah, I think a lot of people wonder that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's because you by hoisting yourself up to that level, you're on you're in tune then with the way the church has prayed all the way from the beginning, and you're inheriting you're getting into the spirit of the fathers of the church, early Christianity, where Christian civilization developed. It gives you an awful lot of depth that you can't get in contemporary expressions of prayer. I'm saying that largely we don't feel as deeply and as naturally, so to speak, the faith as our fathers did. And so we're going back and we're, by praying with the chant, and praying the office in Latin, we're getting in tune. We're meeting up with the way church has prayed for centuries and centuries.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah, and so I talk about Clear Creek a lot to people mm-hmm. because I love it out here. I mean,
mm-hmm. we're Clear Creek apologists is what we are.
We're like the booster club without we don't raise any money.
Apologize for.
We're working on that. But so I've had people ask me, they're like, well, why do they do it in Latin? You know, and they're just, you know, they don't mean anything by it. They're just curious. But I think it's just almost a funny question because, you know, this is part of the tradition of the church. And it's almost like, why doesn't everybody...
Like, that's right. I think
we're just so easily and quickly to abandon the tradition. I mean, we're Catholic. Mm-hmm. We get tradition. Like, mm-hmm. we're Catholic. You know, we're mm-hmm. all about traditions. And so to jettison something so fundamental in uh-huh. the tradition uh-huh. seems strange. You know, to me, the question mm-hmm. is, why doesn't everybody pray, at least some, you know, in Latin?
Well, you know... It's a little bit different in a monastery and in a parish. Huh? Let's face it, that our civilization has become secularized, and Latin and the doctors and fathers of the church have become less familiar to the average Catholic. So you can't presume a culture that was just normal, even two generations ago. Huh? It would be strange, you know, to require someone coming into the parish that he take a Latin course before. Huh?
Well, I'm trying to change that. Okay? Like, I'm going to teach my children Latin because I'm Catholic. Yeah. If I were Jewish, I would teach my Jewish people teach their children Hebrew. Why? Mm-hmm. It's not because anybody speaks it. It's because they're mm-hmm. Jewish. Mm-hmm. I'm going to teach my kids Latin because we're Catholic. Yeah. You know, like, that's why.
Yeah.
It's the language,
of the church. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just that it's harder now.
It is hard.
Well, you see, when the liturgy everywhere was in Latin and everybody was singing the chant, that's what you really have to see. There's been a hiatus now. There's a mm-hmm. break. So that it's much more difficult to enter into this prayer of the church through the chant and through Latin now than even two or three generations before, where the Mass was in Latin, and for exposition of the Blessed Sacrament, you'd sing the Tantum Ergo. Everybody sang and knew the Tantum Ergo.
Beautiful song.
Aquinas made that, didn't he?
Didn't he write that?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
That's why people can't write songs like that anymore, because, Aquinas wrote it.
Like, right.
It's beautiful. Yes.
Not just anybody could write the Tantum Ergo.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I believe also that, you know, we're products of our society, and there's just certain things that we can't come up with ourselves. By steeping ourselves in the tradition, we can join up with a spirit that's a lot deeper than what we can come up just trying to think things out ourselves.
Uh-huh. Huh?
Yeah. So, and that explains why to be Catholic is to be traditional.
Huh? Yeah,
you cannot sever the chain of tradition that comes in through the church from Jesus himself. To right now through the church.
Right. Huh? I mean, we even put the word sacred before the word tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Because our tradition is
it sets apart.
Sacred.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
That's
So it's like we shouldn't... Anyway, for us, we reverence it, you know?
But just once more, the that point there, you have to admit that it's harder now for the Jews to give a Jewish education to the kids, in as much as the mainstream culture has drifted away from religion, and the same, and I would say even more for Christian, whereas at least in Europe and to some extent in the United States, we could call our civilization a Christian civilization. It's not so clear anymore.
Right.
That's the truth. That's why, you know, you have to, it's why it's important. Just because it's arduous doesn't mean it's not worth doing.
That's true. That's
so
true.
We just have about 30 seconds in this segment. Yeah. You've got an excellent bookstore here at the Gatehouse.
A beautiful.
And there are a couple things in there. There's one is like a Libra Unum. I don't know. It's like a
Usualis. Okay. Usual.
On the other
the
side
usual
of the break,
book. Let's is just, that what that means?
Yeah, usual book. Yeah, that's it. The normal purse.
I want to on the other side of the break. I want to talk about a couple, maybe just like physical books or like resources someone could get to help.
Sure.
With chant. And so we'll pick that up on the other side of this break.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show here at Clear Creek Abbey in Hobart, Oklahoma, sitting next to my best friend David Niles and Father Bachman. I want to give a shout out to a Patreon member, Grant Hagedorn from Cincinnati, Ohio. He recently got engaged to his fiancée, Nicole. Their wedding is in 2021. So
all right.
We want to give a shout out to all the virtuous holy men out there fulfilling their vocation that God is calling them to. Wanted to make sure to
excellent.
Do that.
Excellent. I look back on my engagement with so much fondness. Like, that was such a fun, time. And at the time, I didn't think it was fun. I wanted to be married, you know? But I look back on it thinking, like, being engaged was very exciting. And I have a lot of
appreciation. The anticipation was very exciting.
I can understand how, like, those who are engaged, like, maybe don't think it's, not that they don't like it, but... You know, they also, I'm sure, want to get married.
Sure.
Anyway.
Enjoy.
We also didn't mention we are drinking Clear Creek Saison. Did you mention that?
I didn't. I apologize. No.
We are drinking the Clear Creek Saison.
Did you know that there was a beer called Clear Creek Saison?
Broken Arrow Brewing.
No.
Broken Arrow. Austin Ferguson, he's the founder of Broken Arrow Brewing. He named his Saison Clear Creek after this monastery, the Abbey.
Good. I hope he's paying royalties.
He's I don't know.
I am getting into legal issues that I am not ready to tackle.
Yeah, he's a good Christian man. He's named several beers after individuals who were the first ones to bring Christ to the Native Americans in Oklahoma. And so he's got another one, Father Dominic, which is also it's a fantastic beer. Yeah. Aside from that, but right before the end of the last at the end of the last segment, I wanted to ask you about a couple resources. You have some good resources. First of all, sidebar.
Are you sidebarring a sidebar?
Sidebar. Maybe. It could.
We'll
I don't
see.
Know. This
okay.
is like a
okay.
dream within a dream.
Okay.
Your bookstore is awesome. You have stuff in that bookstore that you can't even find online. I don't know where you guys get it.
Yeah.
But like, it's the best.
Yeah, we got a brother who's really attuned to those kind of things.
Well, he's awesome. That guy deserves like a cookie or something.
I was going to say give him a raise, but that wouldn't work.
Give him an infinite raise.
Well, that's
yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So, but you have a couple things to assist the person in chanting.
The laity.
Yeah. Whether it's learning chant or if you already know chant that's actually got the music in it to participate in the Mass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For the frequenters who come more often, they might be interested in buying a Liber Usualis, which is the has most of the day prayers. It's a rather thick book, like the old missals, about 2 inches thick. That gives you all of the prayers of the Mass, or no, the offices outside the Mass. Huh? And then there are others. I believe we have a gradual with the chant in it. I think that's on sale there. Uh-huh. And the antiphonary. Probably not the antiphonary, but it's the Liber Usualis has some music in it. The monastic diurnal is the one which just has the text. Often people who come rather frequently to the monastery invest in that kind of thing because they have their own book. Otherwise, we'll provide you with booklets when you're coming to the offices. And then if you want to learn the chant, Father Abbott has supported a translation of a course that came to us from our brothers in France. They set up in France. It's called Laus in Ecclesia, Praise in the Church. The whole course involves three manuals, of which the first manual is out right now. The second manual is in preparation. It's a complete initiation to Gregorian chant. There is information and sign up, and you can purchase the manual on the website that has been created just for that that manual and that course, lausinecclesia.com. lausinecclesia.com. Huh? So those are some resources for depending on how seriously you want to get interested. And nothing prevents you starting simple and being drawn farther and farther.
Right. Yeah.
That's a class that I could definitely take advantage of. Father, as I've been raising my kids, you know, as we were praying at night, before they were going to bed, we were praying, and I would always try to do a little chant at the end. Now, I'm not very good at chant. Like, I have not participated in your class or anything like that. In fact, I know very little.
In fact, the class you're talking about is there's a chant weekend.
Chant weekend.
So
chant
once
weekend.
A year, you guys, the monks, host a chant weekend to
that's right.
To teach the lay people how to chant.
Yeah. I would say it this way. It's an opportunity to participate in the liturgy of the Mass and the office sung in chant. So the weekend, you know, a weekend is very, very short to give an initiation. And it'd be completely preposterous to propose to give you a complete initiation in a weekend. But what we can do is just give you the basics in order that you can read the music and sing Compline, which is night prayer, beginning of the first night, Friday night. And then the Masses of the Blessed Virgin on Saturday and the Mass of Sunday the next day. And then, the rest of the time outside of that is basically chant initiation with a view to preparing the next office or the next Mass in chant.
Lovely.
That's something I could definitely benefit from. I may have kind of jaded my children in chant because of not knowing what I was doing. And I kind of thought it was a little funny as at the end of prayer, I would be in nomine Patris, Filii, Spiritus, and I would like really draw it out really long. And they know like, and I was like really drawing it out. And they know at the end of prayers, then they get their milk. And so like my youngest is like halfway out of the, you know, prayer stance at trying to get to his milk, knowing that. So anyway, so that's something that
he's like stuck right here.
Right. Yeah. And he's like waiting for me to finish.
You know, out on
and
the
I'm
left
really
shoulder.
Giving it a good go at it.
That reminds me of a story back in France. We were told by one of the novices back in France. There was a priest who said the Mass very slowly, and there was kind of an absent-minded servant. He says, the priest says, In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, you know, and the right response is Amen. But he got distracted and he says, there we go.
There we go. All right.
I do want to add, okay.
Wait, hang on. Before we actually get into this, I have to tell you, I have to just like talk to you about this from Friday, okay, at dinner. One of the things you guys do is you chant a book during dinner, okay?
Yeah. We've talked about this on the show many times.
Everything, first of all, everything is funnier when you chant it.
Oh, it's true.
Okay? you guys are reading this book. And like, also, it kind of gives it more of like a serious, like, you know, like, oh, wow, this is like, you know,
an atmosphere, a kind of formal atmosphere.
Yeah, formal. Yes.
And which can break.
Yes.
When it breaks, it really breaks.
So I don't know, like, you know, I sit down to dinner with the monks on Friday, and it's like, I don't know what this book is, but it starts off like, and the church was having a yard sale, and I thought, I have a saber, I will... come and donate my saber. I'm sure the priest will think it is awesome. And I may be getting this slightly wrong, but I will get the important. The priest, are, like, are you serious, dude? Just to hear the monk in the corner chant, are you serious, dude? Yes. It was just, I'm like trying not to laugh, you know, and I look up and all the monks are smiling and that makes it worse, you know.
It's the monks are smiling, but you haven't, I've seen ripples of laughter go through the it really is contagious. Huh?
Yeah. Anyway.
It was so funny.
It was very funny. A real question for you is that when I come and pray the hours with you, there's just something about the chant, and just, I don't know if it's just the beauty, but, you know, I could open the Bible and read the Psalms, okay? The Psalms are always very beautiful. Mm-hmm. But when I read them with you guys, I'm not reading the Latin, but I'm just reading the English, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just so much more powerful. Mm-hmm. I just feel it hitting me very personally when I am there, and I've thought a lot about it. Maybe it's just the beauty of the chant itself. But there's something extra that's there when I read the Psalms along with you.
Yeah. Maybe the Psalms were meant to be done that way.
Oh. Mm. Wow. What?
Yeah. There was.
You should tell other
songs,
people that.
You know? And maybe the fact that you're being drawn in to a contemplative life, that really you're getting a taste from the outside. But still, there must be something mysterious about that, you know, that a baptized soul can at least perceive in a kind of a general way.
I mean, but do you share that? Because I'm sure you read the Psalms outside of the liturgy occasionally, you know?
Yes.
Do you? I mean, I just think that they're better when they're chanted this way.
Certainly. Certainly, but there, I would say also that there is a room for the study of the Psalms to deepen the literal meaning of the Psalms. Huh?
Sure.
Whereas often the way we sing the Psalms, our focus is not on every single word, but on we're there in the presence of God
They're
in prayer.
Huh? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll be right back. We're going to pick this up on the other side of the break.
Very good.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan and Brother Bachman here at Our Lady of Clear Creek Abbey. We're talking about chant and how awesome it is.
And how you should teach your children chant.
Yeah, I actually tried. So after dinner, we read books. Right now we're reading the Little House series.
Oh, good.
You know, I have three girls and just had a boy. We have a three-month-old boy, but I have three girls, and so, like, the Little House, it's just great. Mm-hmm. And I tried chanting it, and they were not down with that.
Yeah.
They were like, Dad, can you stop that? That's what they said. I was like, okay, well,
yeah,
it works at the Abbey.
It was good while it lasted.
Yeah. I don't think the monks would talk back to Father Abbott that way. I'm just going to point that out.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, as we're, you know, teaching our children maybe chant, and you know, most people have come across the quote of St. Augustine saying, you know, if you sing, you're praying twice, and some form of that. And, you know, I've told my children that, and we try to sing, and I thought, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts. Is that true? What is the context of that? If I sing terribly, does that still count? Yeah. You know, what are your thoughts there?
Well, it's clear that when you sing, you raise your voice. You're using your voice in a more deliberate way, a affirmative way, than with normal speech. It's a different kind of use of the voice, and it's a more formal use of the voice. Dom Gajard, who was you could say he's kind of our mentor and longtime choir master at Solesmes Abbey in France. He used to say that singing the chant is total prayer. It's the whole man that's involved. Huh? Mm. That is your mind, your heart, your body, and your body's participation is especially through the voice. Huh? Now, we recite the creed all together, you know, in just a normal spoken voice. But there's something more if you sing the creed. There's something more solemn.
More meritorious, really, I think.
Well, I would say so too, and more more fitting for a social proclamation of our faith, you know? Music will always bring hearts and people together. So that's another thing. Now, you brought up the question, what if you can't sing? You don't have a great voice, so you're not trained in a Gregorian chant. Well, first of all, with regard to when St. Augustine says, he who sings prays twice. Well, he's not making a mathematical statement there, first of all. He's saying that singing the praise of God is a higher form of prayer than just reciting. I would say that there may be very meritorious participations in liturgy of people who can't hold a note. But
there's definitely some humility involved.
Sure, 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 sure.
And you know, it just strikes me. He doesn't say what kind of prayer. Maybe for the person who sings well, it's a song of praise. For the person who sings poorly, it's like a song of mercy. Or
yeah, but someone who is stubborn and drowned at all the others and ruining the chant. I don't know that would be as meritorious as someone who tried to participate, but as he could, without causing disruption. Huh?
Sure.
So there's a cadence, there's a rhythm within chant. So if you're messing that up, that the beauty of that is probably hindered. Is that right?
That's true. That's true. And some monks, for example, can only participate less in the office because they have less abilities. And that you just weed yourself. One gets weeded out. One's talents get weeded out as the years go by, and you find your place. I imagine it's going to be the same way in the parish. If someone who has a great big voice and can't hold a tune is dominating everything, well, eventually he's going to learn from someone, the pastor or something like that, and he's going to learn to where his place is in the parish. So. Another point too is that those kind of abilities can be improved, and they can be vastly improved if you start early. You think 3 or 4 generations back when you sang all the time the chant at the Mass. Well, you'd be the first time you came to Mass, you'd hear the chant, and there would be no formal training really necessary. You would have just picked it up by coming to Sunday Mass.
Right.
Sure.
Huh?
Yes.
And I bet you too. The number of people who couldn't hold a tune was much less because simply you participated.
Adapt and you learned. Yeah.
Yeah. You learned it right from when you were a kid. A toddler.
So that brings me to my next question. What is the difference between singing and chanting?
Okay, that's good. That's a good question.
Because I think people who can't sing could still chant well.
Yeah. To sing is to raise your voice above the normal use of the voice, which just keeps a kind of a tone that's kind of approximate, huh? Whereas melody enters in when you have when you start singing instead of talking. Mm-hmm. Chanting would be a relatively simple kind of singing. You'd have to characterize it with more stepwise movement instead of great big intervals. It would tend to go from one interval to the next. It would be monadic, that is, no harmony, just it would have a certain gravity which is appropriate to the liturgy. Whereas you have all kinds of singing, you know, pop singing and beer parlor songs and things like that. The chant would kind of distinguish itself by being simple and a certain simple beauty to it that fits it for the liturgy.
Absolutely.
There's very little beauty in pop songs these days anyway.
There is none.
Yeah.
So I also want to ask you about the melodies of the chant, because they're so unique. Like,
yeah,
my favorite part is like during the gospel or something when they're chanting and then they go low. Yes, that's it. There you go. Yeah. That's my favorite part.
That key.
So
it's a fifth.
Something?
Dude, the fifth.
Oh, is it a major fifth or a minor
major
fifth?
Major fifth.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's,
You speak about fifths and then diminished and augmented fifths.
Yeah.
Not so much major and minor in terms of fifths.
Okay. So the melody. Mm-hmm. How is it? I mean, it seems specific for specific things. Can you talk about the notes themselves?
Well, for example, the Old Testament reading ends like that. Tom, bom, with that fifth. And that has been described as a kind of a trumpet call, a kind of a proclamation.
Yeah.
Whereas the tone for the epistle, St. Paul, is much more encouragement, consolation. Da, 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 da. It's much more lyrical, if you like.
Uh-huh.
And then with the gospel, it becomes a little bit more solemn and simple, which is more appropriate to our Lord, the teacher, coming out. Let's see now. In illo tempore, da 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 da. It's very, if you like, grave and solemn. So they could perhaps have been chosen with another idea in mind, but those ideas are very appropriate for each of the kind of readings that we're talking about there, and the modes involved in the proper chants, for example, the introit, the alleluia, and that kind of thing, they have their own language too, a language of either gravity or joy or simplicity. You know, each mode has its own characteristics.
Right.
So there's a whole world there.
Right. I mean, you can almost, even if you don't, I don't speak Latin, but I can, just by the...
You basically speak it.
No.
Basically.
Just like now.
Yeah.
Basically being the key operative word there, okay? So, but just by listening to the melody, you get a sense of what is being said.
Oh, of course. Doesn't that make sense? Isn't music expressive of emotion, passion, settings, atmosphere?
Right.
That doesn't pass through vocabulary. You just sense that. There's a certain amount that you can just sense.
That's why, like, when I go up there and I listen to compliment, I don't even have the book, because I'm just like, I can't read Latin anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm just like,
there is English in the book.
I know, but like, I'm just sitting there to consume what you guys are doing. And I can kind of follow along based off of what you guys are.
Sure. Let me make a confession. Some of us are doing the same.
No way. Come on. Are you serious?
That is, we've gone through a busy day, and there's no attention left.
Yeah.
We're just cruising.
You're human. You're human just like us.
Yeah.
So are there patterns?
I put you like way up here. You guys are like superheroes.
Well, we're not
of the Catholic
world. Dr. Spock, with a super concentration. We're all human beings. It's true that we're bringing in more experience than you are, but as for the level of attention, I think it might be, for some of us, it might be comparable.
Hmm.
Are there? I mean,
that makes me feel pretty good.
To each mode, each mode, there's a pattern, right? I mean, it's like there's
you do it, and then
you just kind of repeat that same.
Yes, that's right.
How many modes are there?
There are eight.
There are only eight modes.
Eight modes. Eight.
So you know eight patterns, and you can apply those.
Yes,
universally?
Yes, that's right. There's different endings for modes, so you can multiply that way. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 modes, huh? And they each have their own characteristics. I can get into that, but it gets a little bit involved.
Yeah,
huh?
Sure. That's you should come to the chant weekend.
Yes, that's right.
If you want to learn more about
we'll learn
that.
A little bit about that.
ClearCreekMonks.com, is that what you said?
No, ClearCreekMonks.org.
.org.
Yeah, that's the announcement of the Gregorian chant weekend there.
Brother, thank you for being here.
And Father,
thank you for being here.
And you've always been very hospitable to us here, yeah? And we thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Sure.
A blessing.
It's my job.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus. Okay, who had a question?
Yeah. Okay, the question was, one of the group here went to the Commitial Mass, and he's kind of surprised that none of the monks in choir receive Holy Communion at the Commitial Mass. There's a very specific reason for that. It's we have, from experience, learned that the low mass, the time of low mass, where each priest is able to say his own mass at an altar, a side altar or whatever, is a very important time, very important for a monk's life. It gives a very intense Eucharistic time. We have each of the priests then says his own mass, and the other monks serve the mass and receive communion there. That's in contrast to other abbeys who have concelebration, in which you that by itself eliminates all of these low masses, and the whole community is there. They have a concelebrated mass. The priests all say the mass, that one mass, and the monks communicate there, receive Holy Communion there. It's two ways of doing it. We have kept the low mass because it's so important for us as a time of individual devotion. And another little remark is that on very high days, so for example, Christmas, All Saints, Easter. The younger monks who are not priests will receive Holy Communion at the High Mass from Father Abbott's hands. But on those days too, the priests who are priests will have celebrated Mass by themselves or at low masses too. This is just a question of experience. Things work better. We're very much attached to the time that a priest has at low mass, celebrating the mass quietly. Huh?
You know, okay. I want to follow up on that because I think that's a great point. That even talking about chant, that chant is not the end in and of itself. You know, that ultimately it's about Christ and. All of the priests here still celebrate their own mass where there is no chant, you know, that, and that's ultimately the chant points to Christ.
Yeah.
And so does the low mass, which is absent of chant.
Mm-hmm. Another way to put it is that there's two dimensions to human life. One social dimension, the other individual dimension.
I choose the latter than the former. I like that one.
I'm glad you put it that way. Yes.
Each one is baptized as an individual person. You don't baptize a whole congregation. Each one prays to Christ. It's not the community that prays, or each one is saved by as an individual.
Yeah. Now,
yet. On Sunday, you all get together, and you have the parish mass. There's two dimensions to prayer, and so it's only right that show up somehow in the celebration of the mass. It's the mass of itself is not exclusive And is not a private mass. You can't really speak of a private mass. But nevertheless, there is such a thing of as a mass, not celebrated for the sake of a community, but the priest simply praying the mass as a prayer.
Mm-hmm. And this, the highest form of prayer.
That's right. That's right. So when you have, you see, when you have the low mass and the high mass, you have both of that in your day.
Hmm.
And this is what we've been attached to. We find that that's very helpful for our monastic life.
That was awesome.
Even
yeah,
though
I like that a lot.
You know, it's in a way it's simplifying just to have a concelebration at 11 o'clock. You can have the mass concelebrated. It's all over, and that gives you from 7 o'clock until 11 o'clock all that free time. Well, whereas we have low masses at 7 o'clock, which basically with Thanksgiving take an hour, and then again 10 o'clock, a good hour for the sung mass, that breaks up the day more, which for us is a good thing. It brings us back once more to choir and to God, to prayer.
So, Father, I just want to say thank you for your vocation. I know that you know, like, you are praying for the world and for, like...
Especially the Diocese of Tulsa.
But, you know, I imagine it's hard to feel like you're not part of, like, the broader community here in the Abbey.
Mm.
But I want you to know how much, like, the consolation that I feel knowing that you guys are here praying and will be...
Till the end of time.
Until the end of time, you monks will be here offering up these prayers. I just want you to know how much consolation I get from knowing that you guys are doing what you're doing. It means a lot to me. And so I just want to tell you that as a way of saying thank you for your vocation.
Yeah. You're echoing what our Lord said. Mary has chosen the better part. It won't be taken from her.
Yeah.
And then another little remark is that when we say, no, you can't do this, or we can't do this, because if we do that, we'll be drawn outside of our contemplative vocation. Now you understand. You see, we have
absolutely.
To remain.
Like
we have to remain monks.
Even you being here on our podcast today is like a privilege for us, because this is not part of your charism, you know, necessarily.
Mm-hmm. There's a few monks that... can do that.
Uh-huh.
That Father Abbott will allow to, are sort of sacrificed for that kind of purpose. Huh?
There is a big sacrifice coming on this podcast. We've heard that a lot. That's, you're not the first person who said that.
The Holocaust of the Abbey.
Yes.
Well,
hold on.
Any other questions?
So someone was asking, suppose you were diligently to to study the chant and become proficient and come back next year, would he be able to join in? Well, the thing is, you have to understand that you're joining here in a monastic liturgy, and we've been learned from experience that to open up to the lay people to join in. You might be very competent after your year's study, but for the most part, it's disruptive. It's and extremely distracting. So I would say that if it could happen that you could be very discreet about it, and we wouldn't have anything to say because it didn't bother. But when it does bother the community's choral work, they'll let you know. And it's just that you see, at what would be better would be that you start something up in the parish so that you can go full steam. Here you're we can't. This is a monastic community where we can't open it up to participation by everybody. Again, it's a question of keeping our contemplative life and keeping it the way it is. There are the rare occasions where you would be invited, and would there be more people who are competent and who really join in? The trouble when we do ask the nave to sing, is that often they don't give much, you know. We're a little bit disappointed. So, yeah, for us, it's a bit difficult to invite people to join in, but there certainly would you could create opportunities within the context of your own parish to show your zeal and competence.
Well, brother, thank you, Father.
Good? Okay,
Father Bachman, thank you so much for being here. We do appreciate your time.
Sure.
Okay. Should we end in his blessing?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be great.
Adiutorium benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et maniat semper.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, HALO is here to help. HALO is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, HALO has something for everyone. HALO is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content. But you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.halo.app/breadbox.